You know, I'm Evan Forman, and this is Necessary and Sufficient.
So today on the podcast, we have Ken Schless returning. It's great to have him back on the show. And I wanted to, as promised, read some comments on last week's episode. Actually, this is just one comment. It's from Seth Hanasek, who's a frequent and favorite guest. And I noticed that his gravatar is that little mispainted Jesus guy decorated to look like him. That's great. So Seth says, I'm one of those people who likes to get all graduate school with the Whedonverse, but it is because there's meat on them bones, and I like things that are awesome. Willow and Kaylee are the eyes of innocence of their respective shows. Willow's arc is more broad. She starts and ends on the extreme ends of the spectrum, and Kaylee starts her arc a bit more mature and ends it much less jaded, but they act as the childlike heart of each ensemble. Willow starts out almost as Buffy's little sister, looking up to her for protection and advice. She slowly grows up over the course of the show, falling into the trap of an overly indulgent adolescence, culminating in a substance abuse crisis, the substance being, all caps, raw magical power. Kaylee plays a similar little sister role to Captain Mal's family, doing her chores while making time for fun and boys when she can. She sometimes questions what they're doing and seems the least comfortable with the criminal aspects of their lives, but supports her ship family both practically and emotionally. I think that Seth hits the nail on the head here. He's describing them very well. I mean, the one interesting thing is that he's making a sort of a contrast between the distance of the trip that Willow goes on versus Kaylee. You know, but Willow had seven seasons, while Kaylee had not even one full season. But yeah, no, this is great. And thanks for writing, caller. Now here's Ken, and enjoy this.
Should I open it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can't do it in a neat way. Prime and Zoom. Oh my goodness. A technical question.
Are you going to be okay with that?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay with it. Prime and Zoom. I mean, the first thing obviously that comes to mind is a prime lens and a zoom lens. But what am I supposed to say about them?
Well, what's the difference between a prime lens and a zoom lens?
A zoom lens is a lens that you can change the focal length of. Mm-hmm. So you can go from a wide to a telephoto or someplace in between. And a prime is usually a fixed focal length.
You hear zoom, and I think most people think like extreme telephoto, but any lens that has multiple possible focal lengths is a zoom.
Is a zoom, yeah.
So that could be very wide to not so wide. It could be wide to normal, which is like supposedly what the eye sees. It could be, you know, any kind of range. Zoom doesn't necessarily mean very close.
Mm-hmm.
And focal length, it's like focal length, I feel like it's not a very good term for what it is. I mean, it technically describes what it is, but focal length really kind of means like how close you effectively feel like you are, right? Like how much it magnifies. What's right?
Yeah, and it's measured, you know, it's all, you know, lenses throw a circle of light. They throw a circle of light onto a photosensitive receptor. It could be a film, it could be a sensor.
Could be a retina.
And it's, you know, it's usually measured in millimeters and has usually a number associated with it. But none of those things are kind of really the interesting thing about them. The interesting thing is really, you know, how close you get into something, how it changes the perspective of what you see. A longer lens flattens out the subject, a wider lens makes it feel like there's more of a spatial relationship between the things in the picture. Sometimes if you have a very wide angle lens, it feels like things are being thrown apart within the picture. So if you have a very wide angle lens and something, you have a series of things in the picture, the things on the edges of the pictures will look like they're almost flying away.
And the background looks further away too.
And the background looks very, very far away. And if you think about it, you know, you could have a wide angle lens, and the perspective that you see in that, you know, the whole breadth of what you see, if you cut pieces of that picture up, it'll have the same effect as if you were changing the focal length and making it longer. If you zoom in on a wide angle picture, you could actually get a little section of it that effectively has the same kind of perspective properties as a longer lens, which I was, it's kind of an interesting thing.
When I first heard that, it sort of blew my mind, but then I sort of realized that it kind of makes sense, because if you're standing in a fixed spot looking at a scene, you can't change the geometry to your eye point. You know, your eye point sees the same geometry no matter what kind of lens you're looking through, but the different lens can capture more or less of the panorama, right?
Well, what I find, yeah, that's true, but what I find really fascinating is the fact that our brains do so much around, you know, we're visual creatures more than anything.
Says the photographer.
As much as anything.
Ask the perfumier what he thinks.
So true. But no, our culture is a visual culture. We work on so many visual cues all the time.
I'll give you that. Yeah.
And what I find so fascinating is the fact that, you know, in the animal kingdom, our visual abilities in terms of what our eyes can do, they're not the best in the animal kingdom. I mean, we can't see in as many colors as, say, certain forms of shrimp or insects. We can't see as far or with as much acuity as some eagles. We can't gather as much light as, you know, say, a giant squid in the ocean. Our eyes are, you know, probably more generalized and don't see as much detail and are not as well formed as other animals. But what's so interesting is most of our brain, with, you know, seeing people, is taken up with trying to translate and process visual information. And that I find so much more, so fascinating, because, you know, whenever you're looking at anything, your eye, you'll be focused on different things, but your brain is constantly rejiggering and reevaluating what you're seeing and interpreting what you're seeing. So in terms of like zoom, you know, if you look at something, your brain will actually zoom in on something and start processing it a different way than if you're generally looking at something and taking in a much broader expanse of things. Mm-hmm. You know, our brains actually zoom in on things all the time, and we're constantly moving our attentions, and our eyes are constantly moving too. And then we're piecing all this information together and forming an idea of what we see in front of us and evaluating it. So, I mean, that to me becomes the really fascinating thing.
You know what I think about sometimes along those lines is, like, if you go to the theater, if you're going to film a performance of a play, you can't just put a camera in one of the seats, basically, and film the entire proscenium. You know what I mean? That would be horribly boring. Mm-hmm. Even though that's the exact view that you have as a member of the audience.
As an audience member, yeah.
You know what I mean? But it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like, if you come home from a play, you're like, you know, somebody asks you how it was, you don't say like, oh, there's this huge proscenium and these little tiny dots that moved around at the bottom of it. You know, 99% of what I was looking at was not interesting at any one moment. You know, you're captivated because your brain sort of does this zoom for you, or this, I don't know if zoom is the right word, but a telephoto for you.
Well, you're transforming and you're focusing. You're bringing meaning to your experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's really the transformative part of it. It's funny because I'm a still photographer, and we're, you know, I guess what we're talking about, these experiential things that are done over a period of time, and like we're talking about zoom quite a bit here, and zoom seems to be a, like, you know, this, even the word has this dynamic quality of movement, and prime, you know, being a fixed lens, has this kind of static thing to it. And you know, I guess what I'm thinking now is, you know, our discussion is talking along these lines of experience and real time, and which to me seem much more filmic in their possibilities. But it's funny because I'm a still photographer.
It's interesting what you said about how Zoom is more dynamic and Prime is more static, because I feel like if you're shooting with one of those lenses, the opposite actually is what ends up playing out in terms of, you know, the body, you know, in terms of the actual photographer. Because if you're shooting with a zoom, you tend to stand still more and let your, you know, you zoom with your fingers. And if you have a fixed lens on your camera, I think you're more encouraged. And I think this is why a lot of people sort of encourage beginning photographers to shoot with primes. Yeah. Is because
you become much more engaged in what you're photographing, because you've got to move in relation to what you're photographing to find the best position, right, as if there is the best position.
Well, I mean, I think there's a cliche, I forget who said it, about how if your pictures aren't good enough, it's because you're not close enough.
It was Robert Capa.
I mean, people have huge zooms built into their cameras now, and now with digital, they have an optical zoom and a digital zoom on top of it. And I think the assumption is if I want my subject to fill the frame more, I just need to zoom in more. Where if you, because of what we were talking about before, the way the geometry works, if you actually get closer with a wider lens, you have a very different composition. Even if the main subject fills the frame sort of to the same relative size, you end up with a very different kind of picture.
Yeah,
and I think in many cases, unless you're taking a picture of a face, maybe getting closer with the wider lens is going to give you a more active, more interesting picture.
You can take good portraits with a wide angle. It's just, it's a little harder. I think we're overly sensitive to distortions of people's faces. So I think we're a little bit more reticent to shoot those incredibly wide angle, but it can be done well.
I mean, what do you shoot with more? I mean, when you're out shooting, whether it's a job or a personal project or whatever, do you find yourself more frequently with a zoom or a prime on your camera?
I have to say, lately I have more zooms, only because I have a zoom lens that I think is a really good zoom lens for my digital camera, and I'm not sure, you know, what situation I'm going to be in. When I'm doing a portrait, I don't like to move the zoom around. I don't like to zoom in on something. I like to keep it pretty much fixed and instead of changing lenses. For years and years, I only had one camera and one lens, and it was always a wide angle lens. It was a 28 on a 35 millimeter. And I just never varied from that. But a lot, you know, when I'm doing more commercial work, I'm usually asked to be doing portrait oriented things, and I'll want a longer lens for that. It's funny, you know, I guess I'm thinking back to like the 1970s again with film, and how I'd see, you know, in the 1970s you'd see in movies people zooming in with lenses, or the directors of photography, you know, zooming in, and it's become this thing which looks so cheesy and so bad. I don't have good feelings about zoom lenses in general, or the way that they're generally used. But I find that instead of buying a lot of different lenses, I'll have a zoom lens with me.
Well, that's sort of the relevant question, I think, is like, you know, if you get yourself a 20-70 zoom lens for 35 millimeter camera, is that really the same as having a 20 millimeter, a 21 millimeter, a 22 millimeter, all the way up through 70? Like, is that really the same as having 50 lenses, or is there a disadvantage, do you think? I mean, and I know my answer to this question.
It's a trade-off. It's always a trade-off. I think if you have a fixed lens and you have time and mobility, you're probably better off with that.
Because of practice or because of technical concerns or
because of practice, because it forces you to do the things that, you know, for instance, that you were talking about before. It forces you to be engaged with your subject in a way where you have to be in relation to your subject and move in relation to your subject in ways that hopefully, you know, I think you'll get a much better outcome with with what you're doing. And also, when you have a fixed lens, you know what that lens is going to be like when you put it up to your eye. You know what it's going to do. You know what it does.
Yeah.
And your relationship to the subject, you know, what you do, how you're interacting, you're going to be interacting knowing those things. But the Zoom, you know, again, you could be a little bit more disengaged. I mean, I find myself when I'm going out birding with my kids that I have a Zoom camera because I might, a Zoom lens on my camera, because I might want to be photographing my kids interacting. But then if there's, you know, some interesting bird doing something far away, I'm going to, you know, I don't have time to change the lens.
No, I mean, I've become really interested in this thing because I got, you know, I've been an amateur photographer for a long time. I think when we probably first worked together, I was probably shooting with land cameras. I probably brought a land camera to that shoot. And I just got a DSLR about 2 years ago, finally, and I've collected a few lenses since then, and I have a few zooms and a few primes, and I love the primes. I really love it. You know, because of all the kind of practice-related stuff that you mentioned, but also because from somebody, you know, on a budget, you can get a much better lens if you buy a really nice prime than if you buy the zoom that would contain that prime length. You know what I mean? Like, I can get an F, you know, 1.8 35 millimeter lens for a tiny, tiny fraction of the cost that it would cost to get a 20 to 70 2.8. So I can get a wider aperture, you know, without the zoom for way less money, you know? So it's been sort of an affordable way to get like really high quality, you know, really fast lenses, which is fun because it lets you shoot under lots of lighting circumstances and you can play with your depth of field and all this stuff. You know, so there's been a bunch of reasons why they've been really attractive. Plus, you're right, this whole thing about sort of knowing what's going to happen more quickly instead of having to be like, oh, where in the focal length spectrum is this lens right now and what's that going to do to it, which is sort of an intuitive thing. But the other thing is that, like, I feel like I'm not always great with making decisions that have an infinite gradation of choices. like even there is one zoom that I use a bunch, which is a 10 to 24. Mm-hmm. And I find that I use that one at 10 or at 24. Like, I'm not really interested in like figuring out what's the middle, but I like having the option of having a 10 and having a 24. Anything in between is like, that's too many choices. You know, and I find another version of this is like, which is actually not another version, it's actually the same exact thing, is at work, I do a little bit of graphic design, and my boss also has a really good design sense, and but sometimes we're laying a photo in, and she's like, well, why don't you crop this a little bit? And I'm like, oh yeah, cropping. Like, I always sort of forget.
Don't do it.
And it's not out of any kind of purism. Like, I'm not printing my images where you can see the negative holder to show that I composed in camera. That's not why I don't want to crop. I don't want to crop because I feel like it's a giant can of worms. Like once you start cropping, how many other decisions do you have to make?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head, as they say. I mean, we've entered into the realm where there's just so many possibilities for especially for image making now that things have become less meaningful. And I think it also has to do with the way that we engage with the subject has become less meaningful and become more passive because we have so many choices in the way that we can image it. I don't know, maybe this is why Instagram has become so popular, so we can like kind of throw this random uncontrollable quality into it. So, you know, it has like this sketchy look to it. Like there was a mistake that was unintended. There's so many possibilities that we can make to perfect things that it becomes about this kind of theoretical perfection and not about something we're experiencing. And I think something is really lost in the fact that it's become so easy. It's become so easy to take pictures. And there are so many possibilities. And, you know, for me, in the old days when I used film, especially when I was doing Invisible City and working at night and really pushing the limits of what the film could do and what the camera could do, a lot of things didn't work because technically it was beyond the realm of what was possible for those cameras and for that film. And that was part of the excitement in a way. But it was also part of the discovery, and it was part of the struggle that I went through to try and get a good image. Now with cameras, with, you know, these zooms that do ridiculous things, and you know, cameras that can photograph in light that you know, I can photograph with my Nikon things that I can't even see. I mean, that's sort of, you're getting into more of a Diane Arbus realm, where she used the flash because it would reveal things that she didn't see, and it was a surprise to her, so she was excited by that. But I think the possibility is we can photograph things so well now, that somehow it's become a little too easy. And this, I think it sort of ties into this idea that we're moving away from a kind of a critical approach of photography to a, where photography has become more of a extension of a gestalt of our lives. That instead of us saying, I'm going to photograph this and struggle to get towards an idea, that photography has become a much more passive role for a lot of people. It's you know, it's, there's billions of cameras now, let alone the billions of photographs that these cameras are making. Everything is being imaged. There really isn't anything that hasn't been seen or imaged. Very few things. So this sense of discovery, of critically approaching something, to expose it, to talk about it, is getting lost, and it's being overrun by kind of the camera being an extension of our seeing the everyday. And it's less and less a critical tool, and it's more just an expected accompaniment to the way that we are in the world and what we see in the world. And I think that, to me, has become a really interesting shift that digital photography has brought to our way of looking at photographs and a way of knowing the world that I don't think anyone really expected when it first came on the scene.
You know, I think we're on this like inexorable slide from, you know, men with axes who fell trees and hunt boar to brains in jars who order pizza, you know, over the internet. Like, I mean, it's clear that this is the direction we're going in, right? And I think that, you know, when you say approach the world, approach our subjects, you know, now that cameras are having bigger and bigger zooms, you know, it lets you do the approach from your armchair, you know, and I wonder how that affects, you know, you primarily photograph people, and mm-hmm. I wonder how that affects that kind of partnership. You know, if on the one hand you have this, like this old archetype from Blow Up, you know, where you've got a fixed lens camera and you are climbing over your subject to photograph them and really mm-hmm. working with them together, like there's a dance that happens, which I know mm-hmm. is like sort of this romantic image. On the other hand, you've got a tripod with a camera on it halfway across the room, and you've got a walkie-talkie telling the person what to do, and you're zooming in and out. You know, how that affects their psychology, you know, how it makes your subject feel.
Well, it's the, you know, it's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle all over in a different way. You know, you can't look at something without changing it.
Right.
The way that we look at something changes it too. It's not just the fact that we're looking at it will change it.
Right. And actually, it's interesting. You know, people usually bring up that Heisenberg principle as a negative. It's like, well, you don't want to look this way because you don't want to change it. You know what I mean? You want to be careful of the impact you're having on your subject by looking at it. But if you're making a photograph, you want to have an effect on what you're photographing, because you want to have, as an artist, you want to have your hand felt in the way, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really good point, because there's the whole issue of quote unquote naive photography versus professional photography. And we like to think our photographs are somehow, you know, spontaneous, and they just happen. But photographs are always made by an individual, and they're always made by an individual. You hope, and I think this is important, someone who understands their craft, understands the world. You know, it's almost like a novel. You know, it's hard to find a novelist writing well before they're of a certain age. I think the same is true of photographers. But I think it's also a fact that people are suspicious of. They're suspicious of the professional photographer going into a place and coming out with something that is somehow has an affectation that may not be quote unquote true.
Hmm. It's a myth. A myth.
It's all a myth. I mean, notions of truth and falsity are, you know, I think, you know, I studied painting right before I came to photography, and there was always this idea of, you know, making a true brush mark on the canvas that always struck me, that somehow if you approach something with a certain kind of honesty and a certain kind of openness, you can do something that is both spontaneous and thoughtful at the same time. And I think a great photographer should be able to do something like that.
So do you have anything else to add about Prime and Zoom, or I think we covered it?
Prime and Zoom, they're both cool. Okay.
Which one's better?
Oh man, they're so cool.
So Ken, thanks so much for coming back on Necessary and Sufficient.
Thanks for having me. Now I want to do it again.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, but not a technical question is what you're saying, right?
You know, another softball.
Okay, I promise. So hang on one second while I read the credits. This has been Necessary and Sufficient. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks again to Ken Schless for joining me. Ken, your website is kenschless.com?
It is.
Go check it out. I encourage you all. I post a new episode every week, so please subscribe in the iTunes store. The Necessary and Sufficient archives live at duckandshed.net, where you'll also find a bunch of information about the project. You can pitch a topic or a guest. You can send a donation. You can share your thoughts on today's conversation, because I'd love to hear from you out there in the inky night. Say goodnight, Ken.
Good night.